This is where we hold them! This is where we fight!
Now listening to Sweep the Rack Podcast featuring Brooklyn Rob and Big Mike.
Rob, what's good, homie?
Mike, World Series of Bowling.
I got a lot of problems with these bowlers, Rob. I got a lot of problems with these bowlers, Hoss.
Jeez, it's a lot of bowling, going on the last week.
Can I tell you that betting your own hard-earned money definitely makes you look at the results differently and feel differently about what's happening in the results? Yeah, no, your mic went out. All right, we're having some technical issues.
Yeah, I'm good.
Oh, he's good.
Yeah, I've been going in and out, guys. So for some reason, it just mutes me. Like, it's censoring me. There's people watching and censoring us, Mike.
Everybody makes fun of my headset, but at least it's reliable.
Yeah, no, it just all of a sudden it mutes me. Anyway, I think when you bet and you watch bowling, you're not looking at them as, like, I don't know, you don't look at them as competitors anymore. You look at them for a means to win money. So I think it's a different way of watching bowling when you have money on certain pros in certain matches.
Yeah. For sure. But yeah, we will definitely get into things tonight, right? We have a lot of professional bowling to cover already, and there's more professional bowling to come. This is why I love the World Series so much, right? Because, you know, we had this whole week of qualifying and match play, and now this week coming up, we have three live shows. We have more match play. We have another live show on Saturday. And it's just amazing. But I'm glad you brought this up.
What was I right about?
Henry's in the chat saying Rob was right again and again and again.
About I love what? Being right, but what was I right about?
About what?
I love being right. There's nobody who likes more being right than me, trust me.
All right, so let's kick it off. Let's kick it off with a little league review. I was looking in my email trying to find what pattern we bowled on last week. Because I've just been doing a terrible job of keeping track of, you know, what we're bowling on and generally my scores and whatnot. So can't find it. It was a PBA pattern, long pattern. I struggled mightily. I did not think you were a Thane. Was the proper way to attack them, and I was definitely wrong about that. Urethane was absolutely the way to attack them, probably through all three games, depending on what the pair looked like. I didn't bowl bad. My spare shooting was good. I think I went like 190, 180, 20. I think I was maybe a little lower, maybe 190. Yeah, I think I was about 560 for the night, so about minus 40 for three. Had a shot at the first card game, couldn't draw the last card, no good. So it was a losing night for sure. It amazes me. Before we start this conversation about the World Series, you know, we're in this sport pot thing that I'm doing. We're bowling on PBA patterns now. We're bowling on three PBA patterns. Legend patterns is what I call them. They're three of the patterns named after some of the legends of the game. And I got to say, like, despite the fact that I know we're going to talk about the being too easy, and I feel the same way. I agree. But it just amazes because, like, some of the patterns we're bowling on are quote-unquote easy. And I got to say, some of them do not seem that easy, you know, for the scores that these types of guys put up. So I also want to say real quickly that, we're really – I think we're being pushed out of Bolero for next year for the sport pot thing that I do. Because it seems like Bolero only wants to have leagues that have three or more people on a lane. If it's less than three people on a lane, I don't think they're very interested. They don't like the fact that our numbers fluctuate throughout the year. They're not okay with that. There's another league that wants to take more lanes. I think there's a few factors going on. So it kind of stinks. And then I went on – I was on my burner today on Facebook, and I saw on the local USBC page that somebody posted that they heard a rumor that Bowlero does not want any leagues or tournaments in their centers on the weekends going forward. So like Saturday, Sunday, no leagues, no tournaments. And I mean, the leagues, whatever. I'm not so sure that there's any great Saturday. Well, I mean, I know a couple good Sunday leagues, so I shouldn't say that. Saturday leagues, I would say, are probably a thing of the past, I feel like. But if they're, you know, if they don't want tournaments in their places on Sundays, now, I mean, this should just be some random nonsense rumor that I see posted on a local Facebook page. But you know, when I read that, coupled with what's going on with the lack of support that we're getting, it's disappointing. So I just want to throw that out there in general.
That's a pretty big speculation. I would be interested to hear fans that, people that are in our chat right now, if you work at a Bowlero or you manage a Bowlero, if that's what you guys are hearing from your upper management. I could imagine that might be based center by center. I mean, you know, you're not going to kick out big leagues that are on the weekends, right, that are bringing in a lot of revenue for, like, bar sales and stuff. I can't imagine that being, like, a national, like, rule. I could understand that if, though, it's a huge open bowling area and they have doubles leagues on a Sunday afternoon. I don't know. I think it's going to be a case-by-case. Bowling with Diallo says I work there. It's true. You work there now, or you did work there? I'd be curious to see if who's telling you that. Are they telling the leagues they can't come back next year, or are they trying to move them to a weekday? I mean, there's a lot of like
speculation. Yeah, we'd love to get emails from people if you're experiencing the same things, any of the same things. We'd love for you to reach out to us. You know, let us know. We'd love to highlight some of these things if this is what's going on out there. But can I pose a question, Rob? And we didn't even talk about getting into this. I'm sorry, I'm getting us off the rails already. But and we don't have to get deep into this. You can make it a yes or no if you want. But like, are we at a point, or are we close to getting to a point where Bowlero has such control of the industry geographically with their bowling centers that they can do something like that if they want?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
And it's going to get worse, I think, unless there's some kind of resurgence of private mom-pop shops that open up bowling alleys trying to go up against Bowlero.
That ain't going to happen.
Yeah, bowling monopoly. Fred in the chat says it. I mean, Mike, we talked about this when Bowlero was first kind of coming in and taking over centers and week. I would love to be able to find the shows and highlight the clips of me and you talking about how this is going to be a future bowling monopoly. I've experienced the bowling monopoly in Brooklyn, Mike, where one owner took over almost all the centers in Brooklyn, and essentially he closed down all the centers, most of them, and the centers he wanted to keep open. He just raised lineage and did really what he wanted to do. And if you were a bowler and you were trying to bowl, you were paying what they wanted to, or find a new place, which in New York City could be a 45-minute drive to go 10 miles if you want to go somewhere else. And they know that. Now, is Bowlero starting to do that? It's funny you brought that up, because I got a tweet from somebody about how they're going to be in Scottsdale and they're looking for a cheap place to bowl. And it's like, well, you could go to Tempe Mesa area, but if you want to stay local, you're going to end up being a Bowlero center. And most likely that Bowlero center isn't going to be a very clean, great center to take your, you know, family to. And it's going to be a little bit dingy, and it's going to be overpriced, and the food's going to be overpriced, and you're going to spend hundreds of dollars, depending on how big your family is, to bowl for 2 to 3 hours with food and stuff. So yeah, it definitely feels like it's getting to that point, Mike.
Are there any, Sarah in the chat, what's up, Sarah, asks, are there any other national bowling alley chains? I mean, I know AMF? Nationwide.
AMF?
No, AMF doesn't exist anymore, right? Bowlero bought them.
I swear I still see AMF centers. No?
I mean, they might look like AMF centers, but I think Bowlero owns those too.
Really?
Nationwide is the only one that I'm aware of. I'm not even, I'll be honest, I'm not even 100% sure.
Are there Brunswick centers? They own.
No. No. That's Bowlero. Bowlero bought all the Brunswick centers.
Yeah, see, my brother says AMF still exists as a secondary Bowlero brand. I didn't know that.
Right, okay. Yes, no, that's true. That's kind of what I was saying. Like, it may be branded as an AMF center, but it's definitely owned by Bowlero.
So they keep it's like Roto-Grip Storm. They keep the Roto-Grip brand, but Storm owns it, essentially.
True. Okay. I also know that there's in Philly and in New York, there's an organization that owns a couple bowling centers. I think it's called Brooklyn Bowl or South Bowl. I know they're not affiliated with Bowlero.
Whatever it is, it's nothing to compete with Bowlero.
And then you got Robbie Spigner, right, and his group that own a series of centers out in Minnesota. So you probably throw them in there.
No. Right?
But that's small compared to Bowlero.
You got to talk about something nationwide. Look, in Mike, in the business world, the only way to drive a product to be better is by competition. Okay, competition, it makes the other businesses want to do better. It's better for consumers. When you have Bowlero that it's running a monopoly, it's all it does is it affects the bowlers in a negative way. Right. Higher prices, they don't have to be essentially great. Put money
it's
into
like
the
Madden. Centers. It's like Madden. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. It's like Madden. Once the other football games went to waste, Madden never had to get better. It's just the same game every year with a couple small changes with the players. So yes, I feel you on that, Rob. You know, I totally understand where you're coming from. All right, let's get into things. Right, first thing on our menu tonight. Just wanted to mention, I texted you last night and I was watching it because I knew it was on. And it didn't come on until 9 p.m., so it was kind of perfect for me because I was, home and getting ready to sit down and chill with the fam. I was going to throw some women's bowling on. NCAA championships. Did you get a chance to check it out?
I didn't, but I got to watch an amazing 15-minute video of the best of seven. So I literally cut out all the commercials. It was on NCAA.com. I went, I looked, watched it. They showed me pretty much everything I needed to see to understand what happened. So Jacksonville State, right? What a really great match, right? Best of seven.
It was a great match. Yeah.
We've always talked great about college bowling and the best of seven format they have and the Bakers. And the hypeness, Mike. The women bring the hypeness, the cheering, the yelling, the over-positivity.
It's a little bit much, though.
Toxic positivity.
That video we got tagged in this week. If you guys didn't see it, if you're not on Twitter with us or on X, sorry, with us, there was a video that we got tagged in where a girl leaves a two-pin and she comes back and she's looking at her teammates and her teammate says to her, what did she say? Who are you?
No, you're a great spare shooter.
What are you? She says,
What are you?
What are you? And the girl bowling the frame says, I am a great spare shooter. And the whole team in unison goes, yes, you are. Okay. I don't know, man. I don't know.
I think it's hilarious.
We're at new levels of this now. We're at new level. Like when we bowled in college, it was like, rah rah, little cut. Teams had some cheers here and there, the girls' teams, but it was nothing like this. Yeah, it was nothing like this. I mean, every shot is high fives for everyone. Every single shot, good, bad. Somebody throws a gutter, high fives for everyone. Everyone, all around. So that video, it was just, man.
See, that wouldn't work. That wouldn't have worked. That kind of stuff when we were bowling college. And I could just talk for myself. And really quick, great story. I bowled USBC Championship one year, and we used to bowl my brothers, right? And one year, my brother leaves. I believe it was a pocket. It was like a 410. And we're cheering him. Yo, it's okay. It's okay. And he looks at us, and he's like, no, it's not okay. Fuck that. He's cursing at us because we're trying to be positive. And then what does he do? He gets up, and he literally makes the 410. And he starts yelling, I told you it was not okay. And I'm like, yo, like, that could never work with us. Because if you were, if I left a Greek church and you were sitting back there and going, oh, it's all right, man, you got, no, shut the hell up.
I was the same way. Like, it would get me angry if somebody tried to say something positive about me throwing a bad shot out the window. Like,
I'm pretty sure I have to find that video because my brother Jeff says it's somewhere out there. I think it is. It's hilarious. No, it's not okay. It's not okay, dude. And that's where we were when we were both in college. Like, if you left a split, though, we were quiet.
I was gonna ask, like, when we both college, what was the acceptable standard for somebody throwing a bad shot? No, you just let them walk off, right? You
let them walk off.
Walk off the approach. Maybe a fist bump. Like, I was a fan of, like, a little fist bump. Like, all right, come on, we got you,
right.
You know?
It's all right. Yeah,
like, we got you. Like, enough, but certainly no, like, no. Oh, it's okay, man. Like, high five, bro. You're good. Come on.
No high fives. You kind of, depending on who it was, because you knew your teammates, right? You knew the people that you might be able to go over and console. And then the other people, you would just wouldn't go near. Right. And I bowled with Bill O'Neill.
I was a do not come near.
Do
not come near.
Bill was one of those guys who, if threw a bad shot or whatever, you wouldn't go near him. Like, he didn't want you to walk over to him and tell you it's okay. Like, you know, and my brother was the same way, Dave. Like, there was no going, you could not go near him either. And, you know, there was other people you could maybe put your arm around and be like, yo, it's okay. We got your back, bro. Just figure it out. Maybe try to help him. But,
yeah, but I watched the whole thing from start to finish.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was great bowling.
I don't
know a lot of these girls' names. I'll be honest. I just watched it just to watch it. I wasn't doing a lot of research or anything. Mm-hmm. The anchor bowler for Jack State, very good. Crystal Elliott, I think is her name. If I'm not mistaken, throws it hella good. The lefty. For Jack State.
Purple Hammer. Just
whacking them. Okay. Mm-hmm. Whacking them. Like, key player right there in that match.
He threw one shot in the game seven. That was
on the other team.
A crazy
two-hander. The two-hander. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, she does.
Oh my goodness. Strap City, bro.
I know. These girls, I love watching these two-handed girls.
I was like, wow. Now, ironically enough, I felt that up to the one shot in the seventh game, that two-hander, she was the MVP of the match to me up to that point. And then in the seventh game, she went up and threw a bad shot and left a 3-6-10 and missed it. And that kind of opened the door for Jack State to run them off. You know, they started striking at that point, and it was lights out. You know, they weren't going to catch them. So it was a riveting match, though. I mean, it was great. It was great.
The anchor for Arkansas threw a really bad split, though, in game seven in the fifth. I think that's really what put the
nail in the coffin.
Momentum swing, because then
no doubt.
Jacksonville gets up, and then all of a sudden they get on a string, knowing when your anchor splits – and you're bowling college and your anchor splits, it is like blood in the water, Mike, for the other team.
Yeah, but at that point, they needed them all. When she split, they needed like every shot. If they missed, it was a problem. So, you know, they were under max pressure at that point, too.
It was.
But it was a great show.
There's some details here that we, you know, need to state. The first year for Jacksonville State, right?
Right.
And keep in mind, we talked about it a little bit prior. As Shannon O'Keefe comes in to Jacksonville and wins literally an NCAA title in her first year with Jacksonville State, which is really unheard of in college bowling. I mean,
they had a bunch of transfers from McKendree come with them.
I know, but I'm just saying, I mean, like,
it's just a new location, look, new name, new is. Uniform.
You're right.
They had to have bowlers.
I mean, you can't do that. But still, though, it's still a really hard thing to do to come in and just, like, form a team and then just win a national championship when you're beating teams that, like, have been around for forever almost and have established bowling programs, right? And you go and you get some transfers. And Jimmy wants the question, do you find women's bowling more entertaining than men? I think, and I've talked about this, as a one-handed bowler at a high level, my bowler in me likes watching high-level women more than men in a way, because their adjustments and the way they switch balls and make changes are very similar to how you and I, Mike, will play lanes and make ball decisions. When the PBA men's now are completely overpowering shots and completely like going completely different than a lot how we make adjustments, I feel like, these days.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. But listen, it was a great show. Congratulations to them on the NCAA title. You know, more college bowling to come, because the the ITRCs, I guess, if it's still called that, are going to take place soon enough. So we'll see some other shows for college bowling coming up. I'll say this, Rob. Watching that show had me jonesing to get into the coaching game at the girls' college level.
Ooh.
Monmouth University, it's 15, well, it's a little further, 35 minutes from my house. They got a bowling alley on campus.
We barely have time to do this podcast, let alone coach a women's team.
For that opportunity, I would sacrifice some things. I'm not going to lie to you.
I need a new co-host
opportunity. Yeah, I would. If they told me I had to give up the podcast, I'd give up the podcast to do that.
Who wants to put in their resume to be my new co-host? Shit, I'll do this shit solo. I'll be just talking to people.
All right, let's move on. Let's move on, because we have a lot to talk about here.
We do.
So World Series bowling full swing, right? All of the qualifying is done, okay, in terms of the animal patterns, all right? 45 games are completed at this point. There's another 16 games to go, yes? There has been a cut to the top 16 in the World Championships.
Yes.
And there are 16 games of match play to go, round robin match play to go in that event. We have three shows coming up Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday this week, 7 p.m. FS1 for each show. So I know, we'll go event by event, right? And we'll kind of give some thoughts, I would imagine, about how things developed in each event, and then perhaps talk a little bit about what the show might look like, and some betting mixed in. Is that okay on the menu tonight?
Yeah, I think that's good. Let's start in the order that they did the tournaments. So Cheetah is going to be tomorrow night. Is Monday night, 7 p.m. Eastern time. Eastern Daylight Time. I don't want to get our fans upset. I know some people do when I call it Eastern Standard. Eastern Daylight Time, FS1. The latter, Mike. Fifth, BJ Moore, Alec Keplinger, 3, Dio Bernard, 2, Mikey. I don't want to say this wrong, but I'm going to go into Schleibach. And 1, Marshall Kent. This was the highest scoring pattern, Mike, I believe, of the animal patterns. The scores were absolutely on fire, crazy, right? For this show.
I don't know about you, but to me, my general point is going to be that the scores were too high in general across the board for all three events.
Really?
I do.
I think it gets lost.
That this is qualifying for a major, right? And I don't know. I mean, just to see the scores and the scoring pace that I was seeing, not really what I want out of a major.
Well, I'd be curious to see what the scores look like for the World Championship qualifying. Okay. So I'm not going to really talk about it. I think... We'll see. We'll just see how they look for the World Championship. So we don't know yet what pattern they're planning on using for the 16 games.
It's out.
But we don't know what it's going to look like.
Right. We don't know how it's going to play. Right. Yeah. I think it's the Earl Anthony pattern they're using for that. But all right. So
just for people let me just say real quick, just for people who don't know, the average for the 16th place was 239 to be in 16th. Leading Justin Knowles, who led qualifying, was average 251. Okay, so that's kind of for the people who don't really know or have all the animal patterns blurred in. So that's where we're at with the scores. I'm just putting it out there.
Okay.
I thought a lot about it, though. Like, and I mean, I just kind of think that this is where bowling is today in the PBA. I think this is going to be a little bit, and I hate to say it, and I know people are going to be angry at me when I say this, but I think like the 230 to 240 average is going to be the norm. Like, you know, on just normal, like everyday PBA tournaments. I think the 220s is going to start to turn into the like barely cashing kind of average, but I don't know. I could be wrong.
I mean, I just thought the scoring pace was blistering. I really did. I felt
it was 300s. Justin Cheetah.
I felt that it was such that, you know, in order to make up ground, you had to average 260 for a block.
I know. Yeah, it's 100%. So if you're 16th is averaging 239 and you have to catch that, you're 100% right. Like, you have to average at least over 250 to 260 a game just to put to get 20 pins a game on the field, right? I mean, it's fair to say.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's a lot.
That's what I'm saying. That's why I say 260.
That's 3 10 pins or 7 pins from, like, not making up any ground, essentially, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't – again, because it's a major –
Well, it's not a major. It's qualifying to get to a major.
Okay, but I mean, it's qualifying for a major. Like that's a little much, you know.
So let me ask you though. So let's throw us out because this has been a topic pretty much all week. Is this purposely done by the PBA in the league?
I can almost confirm because I had several conversations with people this week about these issues and
okay.
That was one of the questions I asked.
Okay,
was do you feel that the PBA, you know, dictates this? And to a person, they all said no. That it's really just a matter of random circumstance, right? Where they lay out these patterns in this place at this time with these balls that are being used right now, and this is the result, right? Now, my point to that was, and I'd like to hear your thoughts on this, is should there be more research or experimentation on the part of the PBA to maybe better understand how what they put out impacts what the results are going to be in certain centers in certain times, however you want to categorize it. Should they be putting more effort to understand that so that they can create a better balance?
Does the now I'm going to ask you this as I'm asking you a question back on that question. Does the PBA lose like value or entertainment value? Do they lose? What do they lose from these scores being so high on their end? Like, why should they care if the scores are high or not?
Well, I think they should care because the players care. And I think there should be at least an effort by the PBA to create an environment that, you know, is up to the players' expectations. Right? And I'm not so sure that was the case in this event.
So,
and I mean, it's happened in the past too, but we're talking about the World Series here. So,
in your conversations with some of these people, and I'm assuming that these are players, I'm assuming that none of them were happy with the scoring pace and what the scores look like this week.
Generally, no. But
they weren't happy.
Generally, no. I would say, okay. But at the same time, I think that there's an expectation that Cheetah is going to be higher scoring. Right. So that one, I don't think they were as surprised by. Right. I would also say that I think some of their concern in that regard is that there's players who earn a lot of their pins on Cheetah and just keep their head above water on the other two patterns and are able to make it. Where there's people who don't bowl as well on Cheetah, but bowl well on the other two patterns and don't make it because they didn't whack Cheetah and go 800 over while they were on Cheetah, right? So but
this year, though, that wasn't the case because the scores were pretty high on the other two patterns too, right?
They were. They were, yeah. Different. So that's why I say, like, generally speaking, I don't think they were so thrilled about the scoring pace. The bigger issue, right? I mean, and we get into this right away, I guess, was the discrepancy with the number of lefties that were whacking them this week. You know, I mean, you sent a tweet out right earlier in the week about, hey, you got to give the lefty something. They haven't had anything. You know, you got to expect that eventually, you know, whether it's random, right, which I'm willing to take the player's word on that it is, or whether it's designed that way, your point was you got to give it to them once in a while. You got to give them something to eat, something to look at once in a while. Yo, so,
did you see the meme I put out, which I thought would get more hits than it did, was with him with the Oliver Twist bowl and the Oliver and all these like orphans, you know, and them going to PBA. Please, sir, could I have some more? Because this is like what I felt like all week was that these lefties were all like the orphans, you know. They've been beat on, they've been picked on, they've been in the back of the line, and then finally, you're giving them a little bit of like, here's a good pattern for you guys to bowl good on, and here's a good center for Thunderbowl, which is usually lefty friendly, to do well on. So yes, I do feel that way, but I guess some people don't feel that way. So, I mean,
well, one other point I would throw on top of that, right, is, and I got different responses on this from people that I talked to, but also, the issue of points, right? The issue of points and the idea that there's a lot of points available in this tournament because it's four tournaments in one. So if you create an environment where the lefties have a dominant advantage for the World Series and you're taking four events, one of them being a major, and you know, you're filling the cut line and above with people who are left-handed, chances are a lot of those guys are going to earn exemption and other guys are going to be on the outside looking in, mainly, not fully, obviously, but mainly based upon the results of this series of events. Thoughts on that?
It's a really fair point. It is. I have never been a fan. And I remember when you used to talk about the World Series being the best week of bowling and best 2 weeks of bowling. I was never a fan of the World Series. And I bowled the World Series probably four times in my life. So I know a little bit about the World Series. I was never a fan of the shorter format for titles. It just felt like a marathon, one-day tournaments for a TV show. Now it's a little bit different these days because now it's 2 days and 15 games. When previous World Series, it was only one day of qualifying, and it was just multiple different squads, and then you could get into the TV show in one day. But I do agree that if you are having a year, right, and you have a set full of tournaments a year, and the World Series is four, including one major, right, three in a major, and it is beneficial for, you know, the lefties, right? I agree with that. You can't argue with that.
Do you have the top 16 of the World Championship pulled up?
I do.
Read it.
Graham Fa, Nate Purchase, Kyle Sherman, Michael Schlabach. I'm Righty. Probably butchering that. Zach Wilkins, Eric Jones, Kevin Williams, Michael Martel, Nicola Bongalini,
Righty.
Belmo, Deal Bernard, Packy, EJ, Knowles, Svensson, Russo. How many of the 16 are lefty? Fa, Is nine. Eric Jones is lefty, right?
Yeah, nine.
Two, three, four. Theo Bernard's lefty?
Yeah.
Five, six, seven, eight, nine. Nine out of 16 are lefty. Quick count.
Let me ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody asked me this week. I thought this was a great question. Top 10 bowlers in the world right now.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any lefties in your top 10 right now?
Matt Russo.
Where's he?
I'd have to look at the total points.
All right, but I'm saying, is he top five or bottom five?
Bottom five.
Okay. I'd probably have Packy Hanrahan ahead of him right now.
Okay. Two best lefties in the world right now.
I think he'd probably be ninth or tenth.
I'd say those are the two best lefties in the world right now.
Okay.
Packy and
so, I mean, I don't – what does that say?
It says that seven lefties are in there that I wouldn't say shouldn't be because they are obviously deserved it and earned it.
But I mean, clearly the way the lanes played had a serious effect on – the results here, no?
100%. Yeah, it's, okay. You can't argue with that.
Okay.
Think about all the guys who didn't get in. Vi 17, Marshall Kent, who led one of the three patterns, didn't get in, right? And I'm not saying led, but his number one seed, right, after match play. Vi Kent Simonson, right? Simonson not getting into the 16, I think, tells you what you need to know about the way the lanes played this week. Fair enough.
Yeah. You know, I'll be honest. I watched a ton this week. I mean, I bet ridiculously this week. If you followed me on Twitter, I gotta be honest, Rob, the lefties that I don't know if it's that they're quote unquote being shut out, or that they're really just a lot of them are one-dimensional. And they can really do one thing with one bowling ball, one style of bowling ball. And if that's not there, then they're out. And to me, like, if that's what you're categorizing as being shut out, I don't agree with that. Because I think that, you know, in bowling is a game of versatility. No, I don't think any of us would disagree with that. Bowling is a game of versatility. So, like, to expect that at certain times what you like to do or what you are good at doing is absolutely going to be there for you so that you can have success, I don't consider that being shut out. I would say that I consider that being not versatile enough, right? And you see a lot of these guys who – you know, what do they go to? They go to urethane, right? I mean, that's what I'm referring to. And what did you see going down the lane a lot this week? Urethane, right? So I don't know. Am I seeing it wrong? I even saw a couple instances where lefties were bowling match play and their look went away, and it was almost like they just gave up. Like, they didn't even try.
I think this year was going to be a little bit of a weird year for them in the lefties, in the sense that they were very, one-dimensional because of the, like, Purple Hammer and the Pitch Black, right?
Right, right.
When that rule, the hardness rule, got implemented and then it forced them to have to use these new 78, there has been a big difference, in my opinion, from how the lefties now have had to almost – a lot of them are forced now to throw resin earlier in these blocks when notoriously prior they weren't even having to even look at any kind of resin, right? So I do think – what's that?
Not this week.
Not this week. But I'm saying is in prior from what it looked like. I think there is going to be a little bit of a learning curve for them on now having to be more accustomed to throwing reactive. And I think there is going to be a little bit of a timetable for them to do that, in my opinion. Like, it's going to take them, I'd say, some years for a lot of the lefties that have been so one-dimensional throwing urethane to start learning how to bowl well with performance. And I think up until this tournament, it's been very obviously magnified, in my opinion, that they've been struggling because of that.
But that's part of my point. Is like, if you're a urethane specialist, okay, and the patterns aren't matching up with urethane, is that getting shut out?
No.
Like, is that what I'm saying? Like, is it fair to have the expectation that from now until the end of bowling, that look is always going to be there at certain times?
So is that
those people can have success just because there was a section of a generation of bowlers that were brought up on that?
I got you. So what you're saying is, what you're trying to say to me is that my tweet that I sent out about the lefties finally having it isn't really the case because of the fact where are we thinking that they weren't shut out. They just haven't been able to
adapt or adjust. I don't know. I mean, is that fair to say? I'm asking. I'm not making that statement because I don't know enough to make that statement, but I'm asking because I got to be honest, after a lot of watching this week, I was questioning that, like, well, which one is it here? I'm not so sure, So, all right.
Real quick, how do you feel right now if you've been struggling all year as a lefty and you didn't even bowl good on these patterns as a lefty?
Yeah, I think I think it's time to consider a career change then.
But okay,
if you're a lefty and you didn't get it this week, I don't know if you're ever going to get it.
So for me, I'm a big Jacob Buttriff fan. I like him. He's a friend of mine. But I'm surprised we're not seeing him here in a top 16. There's, something going on with him that's just not right, because normally when the left is good, he's as good as it gets. Right, he will whack him for a whole week, and not to see him, and not to see some other lefties not making it is a little bit maybe there needs to be a lot you need to work on in the offseason right now, because obviously whatever is going on right now, you're behind. So
so much to work on. You might want to take some time off.
You might. Literally, and try to go back to the drawing board because this was the week to do it. If you're going to make a living on tour and you're a lefty, this was the week to do it.
All right, let's talk. Let's go back to Cheetah.
Yeah,
right? we got sidetracked there.
Right? Sorry, but we were going to talk. This was a big topic this week on going on out there between
absolutely
high scoring and the lefty right hand, the controversy which will never leave the fucking sport.
Well, yeah, I mean that's been going on forever, right?
Oh yeah,
I had one person suggest to me that perhaps it's time for the PBA to try running separate qualifying for left-handers and right-handers. Like lefties bowl with lefties, righties bowl with righties. You divide the number based on the number in the field, so an appropriate amount makes the cut from each side. That's it. And then you go from there. You go match play from there. So basically everybody's bowling on their own side of the lane the entire time. And I'd like to see that. I'd be very interested in that.
Real quick, though, on this whole thing is I saw a very interesting post, and I might reach out to him to come on the show, but he used to design and put the patterns out for the PBA for a really long time. Mark Sabatini, and I saw a really interesting post that he put out about how it was an Anthony Simo post about asking about symmetrical and asymmetrical lane patterns, right? Like, should we be doing this? I don't know a lot about that. The one thing that was very interesting to me, though, was him talking about how that they're still using oil from the 90s that they would normally put out for wood when there's a ton of other oils out there they could be using that are better typed oil. So I guess what's going on in a high-level, dumbed-down version of what he was saying is that the righties are just breaking down their shot way too quick using their high performance and their Iberlon pads, and they're blowing up their shots quicker and earlier than the lefties, obviously, because if you're bowling a tournament like this, maybe whatever he was saying, like 70 righties and maybe 15 lefties, right? And – He's saying that if all 70 righties are blowing out the pattern using Aberlons at a thousands and playing, you know, 10, not starting on five and breaking them down correctly, by the, you know, sixth, seventh, eighth game, these guys are going to be forced to like move to the left gutter and like loft it, which he has a point watching is that's what happens. So it's a really interesting point about the oil, though, more than anything. Like, why aren't they using better oil? They're the Professional Bowls Association. Maybe they should talk about it and maybe reevaluate what they're doing when it comes to like using what kind of oil and how they're doing it.
Okay. All right. Back to the Cheetah Championship. I want to talk a little bit of betting, right? So this is really where my betting kicked off for the week, was the match play Tuesday night. And I almost put a banger together, Rob. I had two parlays that just missed. You ready for this? I had BJ Moore to beat Darren Tang, Eric Jones to beat William Svensson, and Schlebach to beat Pate. Jones ends up losing to Svensson. I also had Cody Shoemaker to beat Matt Zwig, BJ Moore to beat Darren Tang, and Justin Knowles, the leading qualifier, to beat Alec Keplinger. Knowles, gag job, loses to Keplinger, 16 seed. But I also put in an upset special, Rob, just in case madness ensued. And guess what? That's what happened. Because Nate Purchase beat Belmo, Keplinger, the 16 seed, beat Knowles, and Svensson, the righty, beat Eric Jones, the lefty. And I cashed that parlay, bro. $10 into 170. 17-1 on that one. So that was the first night. That was the first night. Got off to a good start. Got a little rocky from there. All right, let's go to the next event. Oh, let's talk bets for the stepladder for Cheetah. Yes? Can we do that for a second?
You did all the betting. I didn't do a lot of Dio Bernard.
Dio Bernard is my bet here. He's plus 550. He's plus 550 here. Hold on. I want to bring it up real quick.
So here's my thing about the ladder, right? The only two correct me if I'm wrong here, and I'm asking. Keplinger, Bernard, and Schlagbach have never been on a show before, right?
Don't believe so.
Was Keplinger ever on a PBA league show?
Was on a collegiate show.
Collegiate show. Okay.
BJ Moore. Dio Bernard, I believe, may have been on like a some other kind of show.
Not PBA, I'm not sure. Not an actual PBA.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. No. So you have two players here that have actual PBA television experience, BJ Moore and Marshall Kent. I mean, I'm not going to bet. I don't really have any. I'd have to watch.
I mean, Marshall Kent's minus 140. So I'm not taking good odds on that. Right?
No,
I mean,
Flybot should be my bet.
He's obviously the favorite, but I'll be honest. I'm scared to bet on him because of some of the struggles he's had on TV. You know,
yeah, I can't bet on him.
I mean, he's thrown some pretty bad shots on TV. Here's the reason I would go with Dio Bernard. He's got a bunch of regional titles already. Okay, that's one thing. He's plus 550. You're getting good odds, and he's the only lefty on the show. So if he can carve him up the right way, and he can come in, and he's got a good look. Chances are he's going to be able to stay there and do what he wants to do. You know, so that's like why that. I say at plus 550, that would be my bet there for the show tomorrow night. Now,
Real quick too. They're bowling on the, like, I will call them the Thunderbolt TV pairs, right?
Right.
The Thunderbolt TV pairs, they always, I don't know that always, but they always seem to play the left better, like the rest of the house, too. So I could see what you're saying, him being the only lefty on Cheetah, right? Like, that's a pretty could be a really more. Big advantage, right?
And they hook a lot more, too. They also have odds posted for the first match of Cheetah, which is Keplinger against BJ Moore. Keplinger plus 120, Moore minus 155. Keplinger plus 9.5 pins, minus 117. And the over under is 470.5. You want something to hammer, I'd hammer that under.
Under.
Because I know why they're saying 470.5, because the scores were so high, but they're bowling in a different bay. And it hooks a lot more. And we've heard so much about how much tougher they get on TV. So like,
yeah, I mean, look at the scores in the rough doubles today.
Yeah,
they weren't high at all. I mean, at all.
I would like a parlay there of Keplinger plus 9.5 pins, with under 470 and a half.
Okay, I like that.
I like that. That would be my bet for that first game. Okay.
Okay.
All right, so we move on to Scorpion Championship, right? And the vibe, the question to me going into the next day of competition, the next pattern, was are the lefties going to have it again, right? Are scores going to be super high? What's the scoring pace going to look like? And are the lefties going to have it? And the answer was yes and yes. The scoring pace is going to be high again, and the lefties are going to have it again.
Okay, so just to put the perspective in the scoring compared to Cheetah, it was about 10 pins lower, right? Jacob Butcher, actually, he made match play here at the 16th seed and averaged 229.8. The leader was Matt Russo, who averaged 242. Butcher, Simonelli, Blumgren, Kyle Troop, Vibe, Belmonte, Fossil, a lot of lefties, Bernard, Kevin Williams, Mike Martel, Packy, Ethan Fiore, Knowles, Svensson, Russo, ton of lefties. So it ends up where the stepladder now, which is airing Tuesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, Jesper Svensson, Belmo, Kevin Williams, Packy, Matt Russo. So Belmo, the only righty, which is the first time in his career that's ever happened, where he's the only righty on the show. All two-handers, right? So it's an all two-handed, four two-handed lefties, one two-handed righty show. Very interesting type show here, to be honest with you. You have to go with Belmo here, in my opinion. Just in the
plus
fact,
plus 250,
which is still not very good odds to climb the ladder, right?
Matt Russo plus 130 in the top spot.
That's to me the bet. I'd rather take Matt plus 130 than Belmo with 250, right? The odds. I'm just saying in general, the pick to win, right? I'm not looking at betting. I'm looking at the pick to win.
Okay.
Belmo has a really good chance to do what he wants on this pattern and really break him down how he wants to. And lefties, like you talked about, I don't think they haven't been really doing well with transition and moving and adjusting and making quick, efficient moves. And they're going to be battling each other here on the Bay pairs, which aren't great to start with. So, yeah, Belmo has got to be like a very good odds to win here, like in general. But if you're going to bet on it, Matt Russo at plus 130 is probably like, to me, like, how can you like pass that up? Like,
yeah, it's pretty good for the top spot. First game odds there, Belmo is the favorite at minus 177, Jesper plus 135, Jesper plus 9.5 pins is minus 106, and the over under there is 460.5. So, again, I'd probably be looking at Jesper plus 9.5 parlayed with the under of 460.5.
Yeah, I think I think as long as they're on the Bay there in the arenas, you're going to have to pump the under. I don't think they look good at all down over there in that side.
Okay, fair enough.
Shark.
Hold on. Can I brag about some bets real quick? So, Scorpion. Qualifying round two, I hit another parlay, turned 15 into 190, 11-1. I had three players to win their pair, right? They had a bet where they had three guys. You had to pick the one that was going to win the pair. I had Kyle Troop, Zach Wilkins, and Kevin Williams all to win their pair at 11-1. So another $190 win there. And then in match play, I got creamed, I believe, that night. Let me see. Oh, no, I did hit I did hit one. 75 to win 170, and that was Jesper and Matt Russo parlayed. Matt Russo to beat Buttriff, Jesper to beat Simonelli. But, yeah, the others were all losers. So, okay, Shark.
Yeah, Shark. Scores went up compared to Scorpion. They were as high as...
One last thing. Somebody gave me a stat from this week on Scorpion. last two games of Scorpion, righty average 2.0, lefty average almost 250.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, what I was talking about, what, you know, Mark, I'm pretty sure that was name was talking about, is how the righties were blowing up their own shot. That's exactly probably what was happening. Chris Prather was the 16th seed. Mike made the cut at 232. Actually was in a roll-off with Kevin McCune. And you want to talk about parlaying a roll-off.
And I think McCune shot 300 the last game to put himself in that position, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. And wow. Prather, I guess, had his balls in the car at the time. So Prather, talk about parlaying a thinking you're missing the cut to a number one seed, right? Or making the show. He's not number one seed, I don't believe, but making the show. I mean, unbelievable. So average was 232. To lead was AJ Johnson, who averaged 246. So higher than Scorpion, but not higher than, so right in between Scorpion and Cheetah. Top five, the ladder, which is Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time on FS1. Matt Russo, I mean, what a week he's having. Prather, good to see Prather. Simonson, Tackett, and the number one seed is Shota, the Japanese superstar. What's your top five? To me, I think this is the best show of the week, just because Tackett and Simo are both on it. And whenever I can see them bowl against each other, I think it will make a good show. Those are the top five, Mike.
All right. Let's talk betting on Shark. Yes.
Okay.
Let's see. What do we got odds-wise for Shark? We got Shota plus 155 in the top spot. Wow, the disrespect.
Yeah.
EJ plus 185. Simonson plus 275. Prather plus 1,300. 13 to 1. And Russo 15 to 1.
Those are
some juicy odds on that show, bro.
I'm betting both Prather. I'm going both Prather and Russo to climb the ladder to get the odds. I'm not betting the rest.
Wow.
Shota, maybe, to be honest.
Simonson at plus 275. Tackett at almost 2 to 1. When are you gonna see that again? As a two seed.
Shota is great international bowler, and he's finally having some success. I think Shark is usually the pattern he bowls good on. I just don't see him winning this show, Mike, as a number one seed. I just don't see it happening because he's gonna run into either Simo or Tackett, and I just don't
more
see
rev it. Rate, more speed.
I just, yeah. Shota tends to not make the best shots when he's under pressure. I've noticed a little bit, but he made some really good shots to get to the show. But to be honest with you, if Purchase didn't miss that 7-pin, he loses that match.
Yeah,
Purchase should be on the show.
Down. I know.
Purchase should be on that show, Mike.
That won me a parlay too, I believe.
If anybody didn't know or didn't see the match that he bowled Purchase, Purchase had him down 1-0 and needed to get up in a 10 frame to make a 7-pin to shut him out. And he missed it and then showed a double to beat him. And then Shota ended up beating him in five. So Shota, to be honest with you, probably shouldn't even be there. But you need a little bit of luck in that format too, Mike.
Yeah, first game you got Matt Russo as the dog, plus 115. Chris Prather, the favorite, minus 150.
Oh, you got to take Russo there, no?
Russo plus 9.5.
You got to take Russo.
He's only minus 122. Russo plus. You want Russo plus 9.5. Okay?
I do. I like that.
And the over-under is 460.5 there. So, you know, pretty high again.
Yeah.
Yeah, no doubt.
All right. So that's the three shows. It'll be exciting to have bolt live bowling on. For me, it sucks a little bit because 4 o'clock is right, like, prime middle of, like, my day because I just get home from work. So it's going to be tough for me to watch. I will be watching, but I being in the West Coast time sucks sometimes too, to be honest with you. Seven would be so much better for me to watch the shows because I could go to work, come home, go to the gym, come home, and then watch the shows. Instead, I'm going to be like watching the shows as I'm like going into the gym at 4 o'clock. So it sucks for me, but it is what it is. Thursday then, Mike, is World Championship. They're bowling 16 games all day Thursday, correct?
I believe so.
And then they will be doing a 9-man stepladder next weekend, Mike. I think we will be going live Thursday to talk about the three shows. And then we'll be talking, obviously, by that time, the World Championships. So we're not having to cram all three shows and the World Championships into one show. So let's read some of the comments. Mark Zangy, did you see that, Mike? Shota made two 8-10s in one match.
Yeah, sick.
Yeah, maybe he – look, I'm not going to criticize the guy, but he – yeah, tough leaving two of them, too, on the same match in the same lane. It was wild. I don't think I've ever made a 2-8-10 in my career, to be honest with you. To make two of them in one game is crazy. The Ring 10, Jimmy.
What's up, Jimmy?
The meme god. I love when the lefties finally get a favorable patent. Everybody complains. It hasn't yet this year. Jimmy, we talked about it.
You're not going to like my points, Jimmy. I might get a phone call from you this week.
Yeah, Mike. You know? Mike,
I do not have as sympathetic an ear to these lefties complaining as you do, Jimmy.
Mike is saying essentially that they're not shutting the lefties out. They just don't know how to adjust. That's the high level of what Mike's opinion is. Me personally, after seeing the Masters, I could definitely say that they probably deserved maybe a major, but a whole week of bowling, I mean, that's arguable.
But I'll also say that, as we discussed earlier, if it's not being done on purpose, then what does it matter? It's really just random, right? If it's not being done on purpose. And I don't believe it's being done on purpose. I do think it's random. So, yeah, it's just bad luck of the draw. What are you going to do?
Charlie, what's up, man? Charlie Tapp, the legend, the GOAT. I wonder if they still have the 11% rule like the old days. Lefties had to win that percent of money over the year. Who made that percentage? Was that a PBA rule that they set at the beginning of the year to like, was that like a quota? Was the 11% like a left-hand quota? I'd be interested to hear who's making that percentage. But yeah, Jason Pavlinko, the only event they were shut out was the Masters. So he's got your opinion, Mike. And the Masters, the PBA doesn't make those patterns. So Nick Hoagland might have a problem with the lefties.
I mean, listen, like I went to Delaware, you know, and I know that not a lot of lefties had a good week there, but Nate Stubler did, you know, like he was able to figure them out and he was playing the lanes quite differently than you might see for the common lefty playing them these days, you know. So I don't know. Like I said, I'm just not 100% convinced. I need to see more.
Speaking of Nate Stubler, isn't it interesting how he bowls really good when the lefties don't have it? But when the lefties had it this week, I was surprised to see him not in the top 16.
Shocking.
You know,
can I talk about my two worst betting experiences of the week real quick?
Sure.
Oh my goodness. I had one parlay that involved Graham Pha against Kevin Williams, I believe. I think it was Graham Pha. I think it was Kevin Williams. Not sure. It was Graham Pha, though. I'll tell you that. And he's up 2-0 or 2-1, and he's up 30 in the game. Okay? 25 okay. pins in, like, the fourth or fifth okay. frame.
I'm with you.
Rob, he goes up, leaves the 3-9.
Okay.
And flags it.
All of them.
Both of them. Flags it. 8 out, okay, proceeds to lose that game and then lose the next game to lose the match. Cost me a major parlay, okay? The other worst betting experience I had of the week was Jesper Svensson. I believe, again, against Kevin Williams, I'm pretty sure. Jesper Svensson against Kevin Williams. Urethane wasn't looking too good. He goes to reactive, I think. I'm pretty sure. It's tough to see on the Bold TV broadcast. A little tough to see what ball they're using at times. Rob, he picks two out of the rack, son.
I saw that, but that was on a strike. I saw that. I mean, it wasn't a big deal. He missed it, though.
You know, like,
you're winning that match, though.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, I believe so.
But we won still, the game. I mean, he won the game.
He won the game. He didn't win
the match. I saw the two. I was on the stream when he did that, too. I was dying laughing.
I mean, he was ahead. All he had to do was just keep it rolling, make a mark, and it's two. It's out the window in two. And honestly, those were the two most frustrating things that happened to me in betting this week. Everything else that happened, I could pretty much deal with. But those two, I was losing my mind. I'm not going to lie to you.
Yeah, I only made two bets this week, or three bets. I had a little bit of a hunch that Ogle was going to be Tackett on Shark, and it was just me of a smart bet because of Ogle being plus 200 and Ogle being defending champion on Shark and really liking that pattern. So when I saw the odds come out, I did what I notoriously will never do and bet against CJ Tackett, and that didn't work out well for me. And the other bet I made was some parlays just to kind of throw it in. I was really kind of bored Saturday, so I was like, oh, let me put some parlays in, and didn't hit. I lost the parlay because I think of I bet on Mitch Hoppe, who looked like he had no clue when he bet.
Oh, my God. That was terrible, too. He got swept by a junior bowler from Europe.
I know.
Are you kidding me? Like, I'm done betting on Canadians. I said it on X. I'm done betting on Canadians. Mitch Hoppe, Grand Fa. Kick rocks, son. Okay? I mean, flag at 3-9. I feel like you should have your ball deal taken away, you flag at 3-9. You know? It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. Bowling a junior bowler from Europe. Like, come on, son. You gotta smack this kid's behind. You gotta smack this kid's behind and say, welcome to the PBA, bro.
Robin Ilhammer and Nikolai Bogolini, dude, those kids... They're players, man. That kid from Italy was his first time over here. Nicola Bogolini. Man, how good did he bowl? Like, he bowled fantastic. Blake is, yeah, when it comes to money and gambling, right, that's what you're gonna end up with. And Robin Ilhammer, man, talk about like making a little bit of a statement and you're in the World Series.
He bowled good. Yeah, he threw it good.
Both those kids were fantastic, but
yeah, he earned it, no doubt. Yeah. You know, no doubt. I mean, but listen, like whenever, and I don't know if you'll agree with me on this or not, but like whenever I see a proven PBA guy going up against somebody that does not have much PBA experience, you expect that PBA guy to kind of smack their behind to tell them welcome to the PBA. Yes or no?
100%. Look, you know who made the biggest statement this week, and I know you're gonna give me an eye roll. Nate Purchase, dude. I mean, literally finishing 15th in qualifying to get to the top 16. I mean, beating guys like Vi, Kent, Simonson, AJ Johnson, beating Belmo in the best of five, almost making the show. Almost should have beat Shota if he didn't miss that seven pin. Purchase has got a lot of growing up to do. I think he's super young, still probably, what, like 17, 18 years old? Or maybe
– yeah.
Still got a lot of maturity to like growing up to do, right? Still is in that like young, invincible mode when we were 16, 17 bowling. But if he can start learning how to get his mental game and how to start like relaxing and really, I think he's got a huge potential and future on the PBA, Mike. He does. I mean, you can't take any credit. The kid is physically very talented bowler. He just has a lot of work to do with his mental game.
Whew. I bet on him in a qualifying block.
Oh, the Rippers.
He comes out. He bowls like the first 20 five years frames. Old. He comes and then he's like ripping his shirt off. He's like grabbing it and tearing it out of his pants and ripping it. And I'm like, oh, well, I'm done.
We were like that when we were younger. When I was 20, I was like that.
No doubt. You know, but yeah, you gotta put some work in on that. You know, if you're gonna go out there and
but physical
and on a regular his shot basis making at that level.
Yo, his shot making though, and his adjustments and his moves, yo, he's he's going to be very, very good. He's just got to keep mental. It's a grind out there, Mike. If your mental game is what separates you, you got to learn how to deal with it. If you don't deal with your mental game, I've seen a lot of people have so much future and potential and talent, but have no mental game and were out for after a year or two. You know what I mean?
Nate Purchase needs to go see Kyle Troop.
The go Mind Gym?
Go get a copy of that Mind Gym.
Not a bad idea. All right, Mike, you want to talk real quick the Rough Doubles show? Our boy couldn't get a title.
I don't want to talk real quick about it. I like the doubles. I'm interested in the doubles. You want to breeze through everything.
I do.
We'll
be on for like 3 hours.
It was a good show. It was a good show. You know, I like the doubles. I like the hypeness of it.
I don't watch
it. You know, I like teams. I like the interaction between the players. I think it offers something a little bit different than what we usually see. Can we run the ladder a little bit on this one?
If you want to. I didn't watch it.
Oh, jeez. Okay, sorry.
No, it was taped. So, I already knew who won.
I
texted Bill that night. I was like, yo, what happened? He told me. I wasn't going to say anything. I knew who won, though.
All right, so first game you had Hoopé and Hanrahan, right? Match up against – who was it? Oh, jeez, it's going to escape me now.
Yeah, it was Troop Svensson, right?
Troop Svensson, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Troop Svensson. Troop
I didn't even watch it, I know.
Yeah, Troop Svensson struggled from the jump, right? They just didn't have a very good look. And Packy and Mitch kind of ran away with the game. They go on and they bowl Simonson and Dom. Yes?
Yep.
And it was sort of, to me, a reversal of the first game where Simonson and Dom had a good look. The match was kept a little bit close because they had some carry issues, but Mitch and Packy lost their look a little bit. I mean, it was right off the bat for Packy, started the game with a split. So Simonson and Dom move on, right, in that match. And then they go to bowl Bill and Belmo. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I agree. It just looked like Bill was throwing it really good. It just looked like he was having trouble knocking 10 pins down
on a consistent
basis. Right. Yeah, no doubt. So that definitely seemed to be the case. But, you know, there was an errant shot by Dom there late in the game. And that was really the difference in that match. I mean, it was a pretty close game up to that point. And, yeah, there was that errant shot. That makes the difference in the match. Bill and Belmo win that one over Dom and Simo, who finished third. And they go on to bowl Andrew Anderson and Chris Prather, who, to their credit, got off to a really rocky start in that game, and then were able to show some composure and get it back together. And they went on a sixth string at the right time, you know. And things just, you know, again, like didn't go Bill and Belmo's way. You know, there were a couple breaks. So I'm not going to say that. It was that the breaks were the difference. I'm certainly not going to go that far. But with that said, I feel like, you know, there were some carry issues, at least on Bill's side of things, in terms of, you know, trying to end that match and close the door. Kind of left the door open a little bit for Prather and Anderson to keep striking. Great ending to the show, though. That Anderson, hometown, gets up and gets to throw a strike to wrap up that title. So that was great.
Mike, he did that twice in one taping because that was the same day they taped Elite League.
Okay. And
he did that for the Elite, his team, too. He struck to win.
Okay.
So he did it twice in one day to strike, to get up to win not PBA title and his Elite match. So Andrew Anderson, man, when it's for the cheese – He's pretty cool under the pressure. He usually throws a pretty good shot, you know. So, yeah, I heard about it. I did watch the last half of the last match. My only thing is, like, I expect Belmo at that moment to get up. And when you have a chance to win a title, to double for it, I expect him to do it. Or I expect him to at least get the first one. I was a little bit, I'll be honest with you, since I was rooting for Bill, I was a little bit disappointed because I'm really like involved, invested in Bill trying to win Player of the Year this year. And he didn't have a great World Series, obviously. And a title there might have salvaged a little bit for him. And I really wanted Belmo to like double there so that they could win that title. But, you know, it is what it is. Good to see Prather back in a way, right? Like he made a show. He won this. I love Prather's balance at the line. I always love watching the way he just posts his shots.
And do you know how like how soft you have to be with your swing to post it like that?
He throws it so good. I'm surprised he hasn't had more success the last couple years with how good his game is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's sick. I wish I could throw it as slow as he was throwing it on the show today. That's how slow I wish I could throw it. I mean, it was dude, amazing. It was amazing to watch.
I think Prather is a little bit of a momentum guy, and I expect him to have a good last half of the year, to be honest with you. I love his physical game so much. Just the way he posts his shots and his softness and just everything he does is so right. I just like to see him be I don't know, maybe a little bit more probably mentally composed, I think, is where he might struggle a little bit, honestly.
No doubt. All right, are we ready, Rob?
We are ready.
So, Rob, worst of the week, I have a surprise for you, my man.
Oh, God.
I have a great surprise for you.
Because I think I know where this is going.
I have a great surprise for you and for all of our people here tonight that stuck with us through the whole show. For the first time ever, we have a guest for Worst of the Week segment. We have a guest for Worst of the Week. I'm bringing a guest on. They guest spot for Worst of the Week. I'm going to intro it. Listen, they're not sticking around. This is going to be quick, so don't get too excited. From none other than the Beef and Barnsley podcast and legend, PBA legend, Chris Barnes in the building. Barnsley, what's up, man?
Man, Big Mike, I'm glad to be on here. And just in time for Worst of the Week.
Worst of the Week. So I'm going to set it up for you. You hit it home. You contacted me. You reached out to me this week through DM. You wanted to point out it. You wanted to give me a candidate for Worst of the Week. So I said, all right, listen. Here's what we'll do. You come on and you give it yourself, but go ahead.
I mean, I think you're like the luckiest guy in the world because for this segment, you rarely have to look anywhere except right there.
So you read
the content, it just makes itself. It just tees itself right up. So
you reached out to me because here's Rob's tweet. Rob tweeted out at 2 p.m. on 4/11/24. Okay. This tweet has 1,500 views too. Nice job, Rob. He said, people bitching about the left side being really good so far at the World Series of Bowling haven't been watching the PBA 2024 tour. The left side has been, for the most part, non-existent up until this WSOB. So, Dr. Barnes, go right ahead. The floor is yours.
No. I mean, we just had some stats and we had some facts. And there's 20% of the field's left-handed. 20% of the checks have been left-handed. Just saying. That was before this week. So, no. Granted, the money has not been how you would take it. But to be honest, it's more of an accumulation thing for Rob. There's not really a singular worst of the week. There's a lot of really bad takes that kind of accumulate into this big mountain of bad takes. Yeah, but it's why I love you guys. You know,
hey, my takes are based on me being a fan. So
To be fair,
you look at my takes based on you as a bowler.
There haven't been any lefties on the show.
So listen,
and the Masters, who has nothing to do with PBA, was uncharacteristically unfavorable on the left for the first time in a long time. But nonetheless, we went back to their honeypot this week, and, you know, there's a lot of guys got healthy. A lot of practicing went on.
So
extra days in Vegas paid off.
So to be clear, you came here tonight, quick drop in, to let us know that Rob if you want a worst of the week catalog, come to Rob right here.
Again and again and again.
Henry, obviously, hey. Barnes disagrees with you.
Look.
Yo. No, there's no defending it. Don't defend it. No. You got worst of the week. You got worst. You have to take it. We sit here every week and give worst of the week to people. We don't. They don't get to give a speech defending their post. So you don't get to give a speech defending
Rob, yours. A W is a W. Just take your W.
And thank you. Thank you. Peace. Barnes, yo, safe travels. Take it easy, Hoss.
All right, boss. We'll see you guys later. I'll still be listening.
Later. Bye, we'll check you on the show later.
I love how he just hops in and gives me worst of the week.
I had to do it. I'm sorry, brother. Dude, I had to do it.
I had to
take that opportunity when he reached out. I said, listen, you want to give him worst of the week, you come on yourself and give him worst of the week. Come right on.
All I know is at least I'm honest as a fan and what I'm watching, and I'm transparent and I'm honest. Now, I'm not going to say I'm always right because I'm not intimately knowledgeable like these guys who are bowling every week, right? But from a fan's perspective, that's what I'm bringing, right? I'm not going to start looking up stats and percentages before I tweet shit. It's how I feel. It's what it looks to me, and I say it. And that's the beauty of Twitter and social media, right? That's all I'm saying.
Okay. We want to get to our real worst of the weeks now?
I don't know how we can be – how I could
– top that, I know.
To retire from worst of the week now.
That's an all-timer. That's an all-timer right there.
My worst of the week sucks because I think it got taken down. I think the original poster took it down, but I don't have his name. But if anybody doesn't know, it was the Bowling Science Forum. And there was a gentleman who posted – there's been a whole layout controversy since J.R. Raymond posted on Bowling Science Forum about how layouts don't matter. And – there's been a lot of people who are, you know, look, the original Bowling Science Forum is supposed to be talking about technical equipment type, like specifics, right? It's called Bowling Science Forum. And there was a gentleman who posted a ball review where he had one ball that was a 2-inch pin and one ball that was like a 5-inch pin, two completely different bowling balls. And he's like trying to post videos of how different both balls are reacting because of the layouts and how different they are. And this guy is missing his target by like an arrow on his shots. It's a complete disaster of a ball review video. Like, he should have never posted it. And I'm sitting there dying laughing. People are tagging me like, Rob, you got to watch this. You got to watch it. I'm watching it and I'm like, holy crap, this is terrible. So yeah, so my shout out to this guy. Sorry I didn't get his name. I was looking for, I swear to you guys, 15 minutes and I couldn't find it. But now, by the way, Chris, I know, is still in the chat. Now I'm going to be gunning for him for worst of the week. And Beef and Barnes, he doesn't have a worst of the week segment because, you know, that's not the kind of show they are. But, you know, from now on, I'm going to be gunning for anything him or Stu says or does on their show or social media to give them worst of the week. So they're on my radar, Mike, FYI.
All right. My worst of the week this week goes to a big dog in the bowling community, especially the bowling YouTube community. I'm giving worst of the week to Brad and Kyle this week.
Ooh, I like it. Okay,
congratulations, right. Brad and Kyle. You won worst of the week for this post. They put up a video. They put up a video for one of the qualifying blocks this week, and the title of the video was this. This is why I gave it worst of the week. It was, this PBA Scorpion pattern was tricky. All caps, tricky. All caps. Fellas.
230 to make 230 average.
Fellas, were you not watching anybody throwing it on the left side of the lane? Or what? Tricky? Maybe in some instances, yes, but like overall, I don't know. I don't know about that.
Did you guys watch EJ Tackett average 235 for 15 games?
I know. I don't know. I'm not so sure. All right, Rob, let's wrap it up.
Let's do it.
My final thought is I'm going to have a It's going to be a wild, stressful week for me this week, one way or the other, because I want to bet these shows every night. And I have a lot going on, and I don't think I'm going to be able to be home for all of the shows to watch them. So, yeah, I just don't know how that's going to work out. We'll just have to see how things go. And I'm looking forward to it, though. You know, whether I watch them live or I watch them recorded perhaps the next day when I get home from work or later that night, you know, either way, I'm going to enjoy the bowling, enjoy the competition. You know, despite all the controversy, and there's always controversy in the bowling community, despite all the controversy, I'm going to enjoy watching the finals of these tournaments, you know, watching some titles being given out. And then, yeah, I mean, it leads us right into Thursday where you got match play for the World Championships and then, you know, shows this weekend. So, you know, I'm looking forward to it. You know, I'm looking forward to all the live bowling on TV this week.
Yeah, thankfully I have a good service that I could watch live television on my phone, and I would probably look into that if whatever cable service you have to download the app and try to get it on your phone so you could watch it if you're like having to be somewhere, whatever it is, because that's what I plan on doing. My final thought is more bowling PBA Player of the Year related.
Talk nicely to me, will you?
With Bill and Kyle not making the World Championships, right?
Well, let's pay the man the respect. I mean, he's in the conversation with a major. If he found a way to win a title or two this week,
yeah,
he'd be the front runner.
He could have.
Okay. I put him in the what could have been category two.
What could have been,
right? Along with Bill, along with Kyle.
I'm very, very interested because, mark my words, EJ Tackett will make the World Championship show. There is no doubt in my mind that kid doesn't make the World Championship show.
Will he make the final?
Look, he's going to make the top. He'll be in the top five the second show. He'll be in the top five, okay?
Will he be bowling for the title?
I think yes, my opinion. Regardless, because there's a few reasons why, and it's not just me. Kid's the best in the world. If he wins, the player of the year race is going to get very interesting very quickly, because you're going to have someone who had, you know, this might, it'll be like maybe depending on what happens on the show he makes, right? But if he wins that major and maybe, you know, wins a title this week, he's putting himself right back into the player of the year category. And you have Troop with one title major, you have Bill with one major.
And a couple other TV appearances.
This might be the closest player of the year race you're going to see, if depending on how EJ Tackett does this week. Matt Russo too puts himself in the category. If Russo can grab a title in the World Championship this week, he puts himself.
Well, I think any of the players who win a title on Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday,
and then
that are in the World Championship top 16,
correct.
I mean, you're knocking on that door, right? You have an opportunity to knock on that door. So it is interesting. It is awesome to follow. If there's one thing I'm disappointed about this week, it's that. And you brought it up already in the show, just the fact that I think both of us had illusions of grandeur this week where, you know, Bill was going to be walking out with at least one title, you know, maybe another major show. Maybe another major title, and you know, we'd be talking about player of the year being wrapped up almost, but didn't turn out that way. You know, it's going to be a little harder to earn than that, but it sets up a nice last piece of the season too, right? It's a nice storyline going into the end of the season.
The PBA Tour Finals is that the last counting tournament for the player of the year, or does the striking against breast cancer mixed doubles and the Lucky Larson, that those don't count for like player of the year type stuff, does it?
I don't believe so. I think it might, because I think the Lucky Larson counts as a PBA title.
It does, but does it count for the player of the year points?
I don't know. That's a good question. How could it not if it counts as a PBA title?
I know, but it's so far, because the PBA Tour Finals are June 6th to the 9th, right? And the Lucky Larson Masters are the 23rd of August to September 1st. So Well, that's why I'm thinking maybe he doesn't. I'd like to know if anybody knows out there who's watching. Maybe Barnes is still in the chat.
Nah, yeah, in that regard, probably not, I would think.
But anyway, so if the PBA Tour Finals are the last tournament, you only have literally the TOC, the PBA Playoffs, right, and the PBA Tour Finals left, right? You have three tournaments left. The TOC is a major. Right. The Playoffs are a title. And the Tour Finals, are they counting that as a major? No.
No, definitely not a major.
No.
So I'm not even sure they count that. I don't even think they count that as a title.
The PBA Tour Finals?
Eh.
I don't know. I don't know. It's a good question. I don't know that either.
Yeah, no, Kevin in the chat makes it. What's up, Kev? He makes a good point. Like, the TOC could wind up being a Player of the Year playoff, depending on who makes the show. You know? It sets up for an interesting end of the year.
I'm very curious to see if EJ Tackett, and I really believe he's going to get a title this week, let alone it's going to be the show or the World Championship. And the only other reason why I think he might have an advantage at the World Championships is the fact that there are 9 lefties bowling 16, and you're going to be able to not have to. The right side of the lanes aren't going to get as funky. So I think he's going to have an advantage. Him and Belmo are going to have an advantage at the World Championships. We'll see. But yeah, that's my final thought. So
a lot of bowling left. A lot of bowling to watch this week. Everybody enjoy it. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Saturday, right? Enjoy it.
We'll be on Thursday.
We'll be on Thursday night. All right, 8:30. We're going to do a quick show, Eastern. All right, wrap it up. Okay, come and join us. Come chop it up. Hit us up on X. He's at BrookenRob11. I'm at the215. Definitely a good place to follow us for betting stuff and just, you know, going over the shows, talking about the shows. Email us, sweeptheracket@gmail.com. Feel free to reach out through email. We always love the emails. And everybody enjoy the bowling this week. Shout to Dr. Barnes for coming on and having some fun with us tonight. We appreciate that. Everybody have a good week. We'll see you on Thursday.
There you guys.
You are now listening to Sweep the Rack Podcast featuring Brooklyn Rob and Big Mike.